Good afternoon. Good afternoon. We'd like to ask everybody to come in and please take their seats. If there's an empty seat next to you, could you please raise your hand? There's people in the back that are looking for seats. People in the back that are looking for seats, look for a raised hand. That's an indication that next to you is an empty seat. We'll be starting in about 2 minutes. We're trying to adjust the air conditioning at this time, because I know real women don't have hot flashes, they have power surges. So we're having a lot of power surges here today. We're going to try to address those shortly, though. People in the back, there's some seats up front here. Again, if there's an empty chair next to you, please raise your hand again. There's a couple of seats up here. Over there, look where they raised hands. Raise your hands again. People are looking for seats. Look for the raised hands. I have no seat. Is this an empty seat here? Excuse me? Is that? No, right there. Don, are you going to? Thank you for coming. My name is David Tomasco. I own the Medicine Shop Uptown Pharmacy in Santa Barbara. And it's my pleasure this afternoon to bring to you the author of the wonderful book, Sex, Lies, and Menopause. How many people here in the audience have a copy of this? And how many here have read it? Excellent. Very, very good. This afternoon's presentation is being brought to you by the Natural Foods Co-op. She is also a member of the New York Academy of Sciences. She has been a guest investigator at the Sansom Medical Research Institute in Santa Barbara, where she lives with her husband, Neil, and her 5 children, and her 2 grandchildren, and her 90-year-old mother, all under one roof. Susie authored this book over the last 7, now going on 8 years worth of research and clinical studies with Dr. Julie Taguchi, who's a oncologist in Santa Barbara, and Bent Formby, PhD, who's a molecular research biologist. Without further ado, I want to bring Susie out and introduce her to you and turn the podium over to Susie Wiley.
This is a great town.
Thank you, you guys. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to use this, and I don't usually. I'm really loud. Thanks for such a great turnout. This is really exciting. I saw all those hands who read the book. I appreciate it. when you write something, you hope people read it. You know, you never know if it's going to happen, but when it does, it's pretty rewarding. I'm sorry. How many people here are on hormone replacement? Any kind? Any kind. Anybody on the Wiley protocol? Okay. Well, this slide is up here because this is the part I do. This is the part I think about. I think about clocks and cycles and rhythms and where we fit in the rhythms that already exist on this planet. That woman has a clock in her head because menopause is a watershed moment in every woman's life. It's kind of when it strikes 12. Is it half over? Is it all over? In our culture, people believe it's not all over. In the real world, reproductivity is over. We're seeing some science. We're seeing some freezer-burned Franken-fetuses. We're seeing menopausal women in Italy and other places carrying other people's eggs. But how does it really work? That's what Sex, Lies, and Menopause was about. It's about what it means to be a woman. I get, not as much as I used to, but I get people saying, are you a doctor? Or are you a PhD? Are you? And I always look at them and say, no, I'm a woman. Because that's what counts. We have life, we have eggs, we have children, and they come and do the job, get in and get out. That's why men can't live as long with high insulin as women can, because women go in and out of high insulin states all the time. And men, if they eat too much of the planet, if they compete for the food supply with women and children, die much faster. And it is all about eating. That's what we're looking at in this picture. Those digger crabs come up and know when low tide is, when the food's going to be there. The elephants know when to come and go. The planet turns in and out of the sun, and the clock keeps ticking in our heads. And every woman, although no one tells her, no one warns her, has so many hours in a day, so many days in a year. We're going to go on to the next slide and talk about estrogen. Now what, Karen? I don't know if this will work from here. Thank you. Now those evolutionary concepts are about the fact that everything in your body has taken millions and millions of years to evolve as a system. So the idea that in the last 50 years, since the 1960s when birth control pills were invented, we could change everything that took millions of years to evolve is kind of a ridiculous idea. We've changed our lives significantly to work in a man's world under those kind of rules. And from what I found in terms of research, in terms of endocrinology, the impact on our health is not a good one. We live too long, we eat too much, that's the bottom line. The reality is we only get so many hours of daylight every day, and we tend to take 2 days to one by leaving electric lights on at night. That changes the aging process. If every hour is ticked off and every day is ticked off and you take 2 to 1, it has to come off the end. And it means we age and fast forward. In another book that I wrote called Lights Out, which was about diabetes, we talk about the fact that we are all meant to have 3 or 4 months of high insulin and long light every year. And of that 3 or 4 months, it's mating season. So when we all stay up late and we all eat packaged food all year round, that's 4 summers or 4 trips around the sun, not just one. Troll sex hormones, which they do, you heard me use the term mating season, means that with or without hormone replacement, your adrenals continue to tick off the time. The question for me was, as I said, I'm a woman, what could I do to slow down the meter? What could I do to stop the meter? It's like riding in a taxi. You just see the money fly away, and I was just seeing the years fly away. And I had 5 children, and I breastfed all of them forever. It was, it's a really long time. I added it up once. It was like 12 years of breastfeeding or something, which is a good thing. But I breastfed and I breastfed and I breastfed. And yet, when my youngest was 2 or 3, I had an ovarian cyst. I had a fibroid tumor. I had a breast lump that they had mammogrammed 3 or 4 times and terrified me. You know, I had children. Was I going to die? And I wanted some answers. I didn't really think they knew what they were talking about. Everything they said, it just wasn't logical. It made no sense. And I knew how I felt. I was starting not to sleep. I was waking up in the middle of the night. My libido had gone south. And I thought, there's got to be a better answer to this. I wanted hormones. But I wanted to understand why they were trying to scare me into not having them. So I started doing research with an endocrinologist in Santa Barbara, Diana Schwartzbein. Then I started doing research with a molecular biologist, Ben Formby. And then, of course, cancer research with Julie Taguchi, who's an oncologist. And the more I learned and the more I understood, the more I knew I had to tell somebody. I mean, I was happy to write Lights Out because I was very interested in life cycles and food and light and the changes in culture. I'm an anthropologist. But when it came to sex hormones, I was astounded how everything overlaps, from being too old and tired inside to not being reproductively viable from stress and aging to how I felt on that given day. Karen, you want to turn it again, honey? Keep going. We're going to get past that to something fun. You know what that is? That's a menstrual cycle. It's a rhythm. Now, I want you to imagine 12 of those end to end. It's music. It's just music. And when you're not doing that, 12 of those end to end, or eventually hit a peak and ovulate again. Go ahead, Karen. That, more impressively, is over your lifetime. That's what estrogen looks like. Now, that's really music. That's radio waves. At 13, we talked about this morning, you get in the car and turn up the radio. At about 45, you get in the car and start turning down the radio. Because you can't hear the music anymore. You really can't. I mean, you get in the car with your kids and you go, why is that loud noise happening to me? Where when you were 13, you got in and you knew every word and every note and it meant something to you. Well, if your estrogen looks like that over the course of your lifetime, this giant pulsatile, and it has amplitude, it gets higher and lower, rhythm, and you put 12 months, but now I want you to put 12 months of that other rhythm in between 12 and 13, it's rhythms on rhythms on rhythms. And we aren't showing you the adrenal rhythms and the prolactin rhythms and... it's a symphony. And unless the music's right, unless the notes all are at the perfect pitch, you get sick. That's how it works. You're like a tuning fork on this planet, in the environment. The light and the food and the stress and a pretty man or a baby. When you see a baby, all those things cause you to twang and respond. Go on, Karen. Now, that monthly rhythm we saw, LH, FSH, those are called gonadotropins. FSH stands for follicle-stimulating hormone. And day 1 to 5 of a normal menstrual cycle, FSH pours. And FSH stimulates follicles, or eggs, to all start to ripen, maybe 150 at once. And those 150 ripening eggs cause that steep rise in estrogen in the first half of a menstrual cycle, all the way up to day 12. The estrogen wafting off of that party in your bloodstream plays the keys in your brain to make more music. LH happens. Those are feedback loops. FSH goes, LH, estrogen comes back, LH goes again and pops the corpus luteum. The corpus luteum is that egg sac on that ovary out there hanging. It created and built the meat in the uterus, those cells. so that there'd be a nest. And about day, well, really from 14 to 19, progesterone vascularizes or causes little blood vessels to come into that meat so that there's nourishment if the egg implants. That's called vascularization. That's how people on fake progestins, like birth control pills, get blood clots, because progesterone controls vascularization and clotting factors and all sorts of things. So if the egg does not implant between 19 and 21, the progesterone goes high enough that the fat lady sings and the whole thing's over. We hit apoptosis. Apoptosis means falling away from life. It means the death of the one for the good of the many. Every cell commits suicide in the endometrium under the direction of progesterone. Just waves goodbye. Go to the next one. You can see that here. The first top row is what's happening with FSH as the follicle develops. The second one is that first chart we saw. Every chart's slightly different, but that's the idea. And down at the bottom it shows you that from day 15 on, there's little dark blood vessels coming into that lining of the uterus. Now on day 21, when the fat lady sings and everything starts to die, we start all over again. And I realized early on in my research that that was the problem, that nobody was singing in my body. That's why I had an ovarian cyst. It's why I had a fibroid tumor. There was no singing. I had no progesterone. I was in perimenopause, and I was shooting blanks about every third month. In other words, I'd have a period that was 2 or 3 days long, not a normal period. That was bleeding from memory. I was pouring enough estrogen to drop some of a lining, but there was no apoptosis going on. And apoptosis is very important because it doesn't go on just in your uterus. It goes on in your breasts and the ducts. It goes on in your bones. It goes on in your brain. There's apoptosis all over the body. And if those breast ducts that have been getting ready for a baby don't shed their lining too, if there's no apoptosis, you get microcalcifications that they call DCIS on a mammogram, ductal carcinoma in situ. It helps to have a lot of prolactin too, to stay up all night. That'll make the. And there isn't a month when there's no one measuring time, when your clock is broken, and your periods stop, or trail off, or are 60 days apart, or 12 days long, it's not okay. It's not healthy anymore. It's not some natural, beautiful period of winding down and entering a new space with postmenopausal zest. It's really the beginning of dying in so many ways you can't imagine. Trust me, I love the feminists too. In fact, I went to Margaret Mead's daughter, Mary Catherine Bateson, and I said, did your mother really say postmenopausal zest? And she said, my mother had estrogen shots once a week. And I said, oh, postmenopausal zest. I get it. Okay. So, that was taken out of context. She did not mean you had to stay in menopause. This is a picture of differentiation. One of the things progesterone does, cancer happens when cells do not differentiate, when they don't all have a purpose. Now, granted, they do work together in some groups, but they have purposes. An undifferentiated cell is the beginning of cancer. They all decide on a different purpose, and it's not you. And progesterone in puberty causes differentiation. What happens is when you're a very young girl and your adrenal glands put out testosterone, eventually you reach a crescendo where it's converted to estrogen. And when you get enough estrogen on board to reach a peak, you'll pop eggs that have been waiting. So the first cycle you have as a young woman is not ovulatory in the sense of a ripened egg, so much as an egg that's ready to go, and the system cranks over like a car, and it takes a while to start. You remember that. But while you're growing breast buds, the differentiation, girls who have estrogen pouring for a very long time and don't ovulate have giant breasts. The girls with smaller breasts ovulated sooner. Okay? Go on to the next one. Now, this picture, obviously, is my favorite. It's the whole deal. And nobody told us. Some of us got hip to it. Some of us read mothering magazines. Some of us had children early. Some of us had no children. And you can't breastfeed children you never had. It's very hard. There was 85% of the world's data on breast cancer sifted for breastfeeding and childbearing. It was 40 studies from 37 countries. And as I said to the doctors this morning, it was magnificent because I work with scientists. One of the first things I found out working with Bent Formby was I couldn't get a straight answer. I thought it was strange. We wrote this paper. We knew what happened in the Petri plate. And we were trying to publish it. And yet at the end of the paper, it said, we conjecture that it might happen. You know, could on some day in another planet, could be the case that. And I said, Bent, we know what happened. And he said, you can't write it like that. And I said, why can't we write it like that? And he said, you just don't write it like that. Well, come down to it. You don't write it like that if you're a scientist, because if somebody comes out the next day and proves you're wrong, your career is down the tubes. So you never say anything definitively. So I was shocked when I saw this study, this British study, because it said at the end of the study, we conclude. Scientists don't conclude anything. They concluded something. They concluded that if women breastfed 9 months longer than the norm, what's the norm in this nation, ladies?
3 months.
3 months. They're just learning how to do it by 3 months, but 3 months. You know, you've nursed a baby, they barely get it right by 3 months, okay? You can barely get the milk out, but 3 months. If every woman breastfed 9 months longer than the norm, which is 3 months, or 12 months, 25,000 lives would be saved from breast cancer every year. If women breastfed 12 months longer than the norm, or 15 months, which is the norm in developing nations, you know, where nobody goes to work, 50,000 lives would be saved. This was a statement. Well, only 47,000 of us die every year from breast cancer. Then they gave you real statistics in this article. You know, everybody wants to estimate their risk of breast cancer. We all wake up in a hole worried about if we're going to be that 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 in the women we know that goes down. Well, they'll tell you, look at your vitamins, look at your heredity, look at your... And yet they will tell you very clearly the most significant cause of breast cancer is aging. They'll tell you that. But there really isn't a genetic link that they can find, and there really isn't a nutritional link that they can find. And I figured out how many years I breastfed. I sat there and did the numbers and all the children. And that's a real way to estimate your risk. So as I'm reading all these things, very glad I breastfed, but I still had a lump they mammogrammed, and I still had ovarian cysts. I wanted to figure out what to do. So I thought I'd work it backwards. Go to the next. Yeah. I worked it backwards to birth control pills. That was the first stop on the journey back to 1850. For those of you who have read Sex, Lies, and Menopause, I wanted to know what it was like to be a woman when you got up in the morning and you spent your whole day finding food for your family or cleaning their house or whatever. You even made it in your own body if you were breastfeeding. And breast cancer, by the way, is 1 in 7 in my generation. I'm 53. It will be 1 in 5 in my 25-year-old daughters. In 1856, it was 1 in 96. Okay, there's a clue. So I went forward, and I watched the statistics whittle down through electric lighting and processed food and baby formula. It was a big one. And then, of course, birth control pills. This was a watershed moment in human history. I mean, women had always said no thank you to reproduction, and everybody had herbs, and people knew how, and, oh, my God, there are barrier methods. But for the first time to wholesale refuse to reproduce with synthetic drugs never happened before in human history. Just never happened. I talk to my daughters a lot about this because I can say this because nobody's here. We have people visiting. And these people are my daughter's in-laws. And our new family, the mom of my son-in-law, is an old-fashioned girl. In terms of the conversations she has with her husband, in terms of what she thinks is her role in her job. And my daughter looked at me and said, "What the hell is this? This step and fetch it thing, what's going on?" And I said, "Sweetie," this woman is 15 years older than I am, 12, okay? And I said, "Sweetie, it was like that." And she said, "You're kidding." And I said, no, it was like that. Women depended on men to feed them. They had babies. They didn't go earn their own living. It was a different relationship between men and women. And she said, "But you always tell me, Mom, it was better." I said, "I never said that part was better. I said it was better for our health. I said we made a choice. We're very different people, women now. But a lot of us are going to die for it. It's like an army. The guys in the front fall first. And that's what's happening. We took birth control pills like people were handing out Pez. Nobody ever said, should you take hormones? Did anybody ever ask their doctor, do you think I should take hormones? No. Did your doctor ever say, you better be careful, these are hormones? No. Now you go in and say, I want hormones. They go, oh my God. But they didn't then. The women we were listening to, the Times, Betty Friedan was not an environmental endocrinologist. Germaine Greer, not an evolutionary biologist. Gloria Steinem, not an oncologist, you know? They didn't know. Acting like men seemed like a good idea at the time. It seemed easier. God knows it's harder being a woman. But now that ship has sailed, now that some of us didn't have children and some of us did but stayed up all night and lived on Pepsi and cookies, which I did, and some of us, even the ones who rode bikes and ate right, they're the ones probably who didn't have kids. They had time to ride bikes and eat right. I don't think I did. We go to our doctor, that's the guy in the picture, and sometimes it's a woman, and say, now what? And what do they tell you? Let's have a mammogram. Let's take the one part of our body we don't want to get cancer and irradiate it with the only thing we know that causes cancer, which is ionizing radiation. And so we can do it really good, let's compress it to the point that our eyes water and cause as much soft tissue injury as possible so we get an immune response for wound healing. This is not a solution. Go on. Okay. There's something new coming out of Santa Barbara besides me, and it's called ductal lavage. They sort of jam a drinking straw into your nipple and try to suck out some of the fluid to look for cancer. So, yeah, everybody cover your chest with your hands right now. Excellent. Protect your breasts. Yeah, don't do that. It doesn't mean anything anyway, even if they... You see, here's the problem with early detection. If they had a cure, if they had something that worked, it might matter. But they don't. So early detection only does not defer date of death. It only lets you know you're dying longer. That's different. It does not defer date of death. And in fact, I would tell you it is my worldview that in some cases it may speed it up with the treatment. This is, again, this is old. This is like 1993, 12 years ago. It was very obvious that the biggest cause of breast cancer, risk of developing breast cancer, is aging. Just aging. 1 in 9 versus 1 in 19,000 when you're 25. You got it? Now 25-year-olds are 1 in 5 by the time they're our age. Go ahead. So, if you had breast cancer, they're going to offer you, I love that picture of radiation from like an old horror movie. That's how they radiated breasts for breast cancer. It's like the 20s. Then there's, now everybody knows what that picture is up in the right-hand corner, right? That's not a foreign picture. People should not know that's chemotherapy. That's how ubiquitous that image is in our culture, that we all know what that is. We all know. And the other one's tamoxifen. You remember in Sex, Lies, and Menopause, I talked about a woman named, does anybody remember Rose Kushner? Rose, who went out and single-handedly stopped radical mastectomy, where they used to literally quarter women and their arms would fall off, trying to get it all. Rose stopped that, but then she died of breast cancer because her best friend was a guy named Bernard Fisher, who was part of inventing tamoxifen. Contralateral breast cancer. Tamoxifen can cause contralateral breast cancer in the opposite breast that is more virulent and less receptive to anything on the planet, and not even you anymore, because the estrogen reception has been shut down. So you can't talk to it anymore. The reason I stand here and stridently say they've got nothing, when some of you have been treated for cancer, and some of you know people who had cancer treatment and may still be alive, the reason I say that is because the statistics tell me that this year 213,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And 5 years out, 33,000 will have died. 10 years out, 60-some thousand will have died. 15 years out, 90-some thousand will have died. 20 years out, half of them will have died. In 1952, the statistics on surviving breast cancer was 20 years out, half of everybody was dead. Nothing has changed, honestly, in 50 years. And when I wrote it down, for God's sake, and gave it to Julie Taguchi, the oncologist, who had to sign off on this because her name is on the book, she just looked sad. Because there's no arguing. She handed me the ASCO book, the American College of Oncologists, ASCO. There was a big convention. I think it was in Chicago. No, it was in New Orleans, Chicago. She brought me back the book. It's really thick. And it's all the abstracts from all the studies they're doing and presented and whatever. And she said, we got to look in here. There's this one on tamoxifen, and there's this one, and there's this. And I looked at her, and I said, Julie, what's it say on the cover? She said, it says ASCO. I said, no, it says 34th annual. You've been doing this for 34 years and you've got nothing. It's not working. It's not happening because the causes of breast cancer and the causes of other kinds of cancer in women and the leading killer of women, heart attack, have never been addressed. It's about hormones because we die when they go away. We start to die. So if you don't get breast cancer, that's a heart attack. And it is more likely that any one of us will die of a heart attack than breast cancer. Breast cancer is just trendier. People wear pink ribbons and they raise money and breasts are kind of sexy. But we're really all just going to drop like guys of heart attacks, most of us. It's true. Kills far more women than breast cancer ever did or ever will. The lining of your heart is dependent on a crescendo of estrogen and then a crescendo of progesterone. Whether or not your heart is seasoned by a pregnancy and subsequent pregnancies and breastfeeding, I don't know. I looked, but nobody else ever looked. So I couldn't find anything to prove it. My guess is probably, we know the brain is. They do studies showing women with children get smarter and smarter because they have to problem solve, I'm guessing. But your heart significantly changes from day one of a menstrual cycle to day 28. Progesterone calms down twitchy cells in major arteries. There's a kind of heart attack that only women have called sudden vasospasm. And in sudden vasospasm, an artery will clamp down and just never let go. And it hits women mostly in perimenopause, before menopause, as you're going in and out of, for lack of a clinical term, wonky cycles. After menopause, you die of a heart attack like a guy. You get cholesterol plaquing. You get lesions, foam cells, occluded arteries, and eventually myocardial infarction, which is just garden variety, something stuck in one of your pipes and you're having a heart attack. So they'll give you cholesterol-lowering drugs, even if you're in your 40s when cholesterol is not part of the scenario of the heart attack in a young woman. They'll give it to you anyway. They're going to put it in the water supply. They're trying to make a combination tamoxifen, you know, statin drug that we could all just, you know, drink every day. This is a stroke. Strokes happen a lot to women. You remember progesterone controls something called VEGF, or vascular endothelial growth factor, how those tiny arteries and capillaries and veins all work at the direction of progesterone. We know that in the Women's Health Initiative, the final outcome, although they started by announcing their findings on breast cancer, the final outcome was that Prempro will give you a heart attack. It will give you a stroke. The cardiovascular events were incredible in the Women's Health Initiative because progestins don't exactly control your cardiovascular system the same way real progesterone would. And we know, there in the book, those of you who read it, I talked about two scientists called Grady and Rubin. These two doctors are women, and they have been looking at estrogen and cardiac health since the late 70s. For years, they would publish the benefits of estrogen on your cardiovascular system. Suddenly, in the 80s, all of the research turns, and estrogen is not beneficial. They can't figure out, and you're just not doing it. And they're looking, of course, at the populations of women on hormone replacement therapy. Well, what happened was, in the 80s, hormone replacement therapy became Prempro. See, Premarin and Provera, the two drugs they had, women took Premarin alone forever. Forever. From the late 30s on, they took Premarin alone. All the way through the 50s. Finally, in the early 70s, a doctor wrote a letter to the Lancet. No, it was the New England Journal of Medicine. And said, does anybody else see uterine cancer in your Premarin patients? And the floodgates opened. Doctors from all over the country went, oh my God, yeah, everybody's got uterine cancer from Premarin. So Wyeth Ayers, who had just bought this drug from Upjohn, decided they would solve that. I actually talked to one of the guys who worked on it, a man named Sherman. This Dr. Sherman, I'd read a paper of his, wrote that progesterone would solve uterine cancer. He had done the research. So I tracked him down. He had been at some army hospital in Iowa. And then I found him at Anergen in California. It took a while. And I called him. I call people who do studies and try to talk to them, find out what they were thinking. And I said to him, you wrote this paper. He said, yes. And I said, at the bottom it says in really small type, you think it might work in breast cancer too? Progesterone. And I said, why didn't you tell anybody? You know how many women have died since you published this paper in the early 70s? More than World War II, Vietnam, Korea, all together. Do you understand? And he said, that wasn't my job. I said, okay, thanks. But I think it's my job. So we're going to continue to talk about it. The doctors finally got the message because Wyeth Ayers came out with Provera. They could not sell a natural substance, and Premarin was conjugated estrogens. It was about 471, I mean, some estradiol in it and horse estrogen and all these things mixed together like cigarettes, you know, with all the additives. They came out with Provera, which was a progestin like the birth control stuff. They had to use it up anyway. But it was the least to stop uterine cancer, and it did. But no one would take it. It was the least refilled prescription in the United States 10 years running because it made women sick. It made them bloat. It made them have headaches. Some women vomited all the time. It was a nightmare. And they couldn't get women to take it. And if they couldn't get women to take it, they couldn't sell Premarin. So they made a combination pill called Prempro in 1983. And when you put these two drugs together, they're exceptionally lethal. And all kinds of women started dropping dead from heart attacks who had seen a benefit from estrogen alone. because you can't take hormones simultaneously all the time in low chronic doses, even synthetic ones. So when I was looking at the cardiovascular effects of synthetic drugs, hormone-like drugs, I also looked at natural hormones. In the book, as you all know, as I was trying to figure out what was wrong with the hormones they were offering us, I was trying to find out what was right with the ones we could get our hands on and how best to take them. And the big issue was stroking and heart attack from synthetic drugs. Actually, Premarin alone in the Women's Health Initiative, when they didn't give Provera with it, was beneficial to breast cancer by 2 points or something. You didn't get as much breast cancer on estrogen alone. Okay. Go ahead, Karen. This is Alzheimer's. It's called senile dementia, really. But if it hits you earlier than 70, they call it Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's has some slight differences. There are plaques and tangles from something called beta amyloid protein. But this guy did something called the Nun Study, where he found a convent full of nuns. And he went to their entrance essays. And the ones who were most verbal and descriptive in applying to the convent, he decided had the most estrogen, because it is well known that estrogen is part of verbal abilities. Then he said, "Can I have your brains when you die?" And they said, "Sure," because they were nuns and, you know, they like to do nice things. So as they died, he would look at their brains. And the interesting thing that came out of the Nun Study was, not only did the ones who had more estrogen coming in have less plaques and tangles, but more importantly, it wasn't the plaques and tangles that made them really Looney Tunes. The ones who had the most Alzheimer's had the most stroking around the plaques and tangles. So it's still a matter of stroking. It's still a matter of you can't have estrogen without progesterone and make it really work. So this is arthritis. This just makes you wish you were dead. When you get up every morning and your knees hurt, and my thumb right here kills me sometimes, and hip joints, that's autoimmunity. What happens is you are supposed to be immunosuppressed at least half of every month. Then you are supposed to go through large stretches of time, 9 months at a time, being immunosuppressed, because you couldn't carry a fetus to term if your immune system could identify it wasn't you. It would kill it. So the progesterone coming out of that self-regulating tumor called a placenta, and of course the well-differentiated tumor, the baby, the placenta immunosuppresses you so you can carry the baby to term. You are immunosuppressed the minute the corpus luteum pops and you pop an egg, because you might implant an egg that has DNA in it, or you might meet the sperm, and then the resulting blastocyst will have DNA in it that's not yours. And you'll lose that baby immediately if your immune system can identify it. So when you're no longer immunosuppressed half of every month, you start to eat your own joints. Part of heart disease is autoimmunity. Part of senile dementia is autoimmunity. Pretty much on a scale of everything, there are two immune systems. There's the one in your gut that is made for you by the bacteria that live symbiotically in you. And they throw off things called endotoxin LPS, which makes your immune system respond in a myriad of ways with cytokines that keep their cousins out, other bacteria. You're their condo. That's one immune system. That's defense. There are two arms to immunity. And then there's autoimmunity. And autoimmunity is the planet deciding if you're reproductive anymore and taking you out because you're not. So if you want to fool the big immune system out there, you continue to fool Mother Nature and look reproductive. These were the conclusions that I came up with after years and years of research in terms of cancer, in terms of quality of life, in terms of heart disease. It became obvious to me that you can't live without hormones or live well. Sometimes you can't live at all. And then I had to decide how to take them. And obviously, I would want a bioidentical molecule that came from food. I would want the health food of hormones. Up there, you're looking at hops, which are in beer. And the hops have more estrogen in them than anything. Straight estrogen. That's why old guys get breasts if they drink beer. That's why your husband of all 40 years, who's always been a tough guy, you say something mean to him when he's an old guy and he starts to weep, okay? It's the estrogen in the hops, all right? The middle one is those are soybeans. We all know that estrogen, phytoestrogens. And what happens is you take something out called genistein, and out of another one it's diazogen. Out of the yams, those aren't really yams. They're supposed to be, but I could only find sweet potatoes. And mistletoe. Mistletoe has the heaviest dose of progesterone or progestogenic substance. I mean, throughout the ages. The Celtic word for mistletoe means cure-all. They used to carry it in a bottle of water. There's a wonderful story about in Druidic times when they were going to have the winter solstice. The whole time the women were preparing for the festival, they drank sort of a mead, you know, somewhere between a beer and a tea, made out of mistletoe. A couple of weeks. Then when the festival hit, everyone had an orgy. Just an orgy. Everybody. And then they had a period the next day because they stopped drinking the mistletoe tea. It's like a progesterone challenge. But us, now, we hang mistletoe over the door and say, it's poisonous for the kids, but you could kiss under it. Get it? That's all that's left. Now, although that cycle looks a little different than the one we use, it's the same idea. And number two is Prempro. That's how you take Prempro, every day. Both of them. That's how some people take bioidentical molecules, every day. Some of it. Quarter teaspoon of progesterone and a Vivel patch, and I don't know. And the bottom one is Premarin with Provera added. Or it's a Vivel patch with Prometrium. Or it's Triest or Biest with Prometrium or transdermal progesterone. Number two and number three do not look like number one in any way, shape, or form. So if that's being a woman, this is a third thing. You're not a woman or a man on those kinds of hormones. You're a third thing. And there's nothing in the architecture, there's nothing in the plan for a third thing on Earth. And it can cause problems, not just socially. You do realize women on birth control pills, some of you read this in the book, they did a dirty T-shirt test where men wore T-shirts and did heavy lifting. And they put them in Ziploc bags so they could really ferment. And then they gave them to two groups of women. One on the pill, one not. And they said, pick the T-shirts you like, women. This was a test for MHC, or major histocompatibility factors. Because infertility stems a great deal from trying to marry two immune systems that won't make it. The egg will fall out. So they were doing fertility tests. The women on no birth control pills picked the T-shirts they liked and thought some of them were kind of cool, sexy. The other women thought they were all repellent, but picked some. And invariably, at the end of the study, all of the women on birth control pills picked the immune system that was like theirs. That will assure miscarriage. And all the women not on birth control pills picked the opposite immune factors because they could smell it. The Hutterites, the Amish, people who mate in close quarters, in small groups, all manage to pick by smelling. That's why they don't have wild birth defects, even in those small groups. The important part about the dirty T-shirt test was that after birth control pills hit in the 60s, there was a rash of divorce in the 70s. When everybody looked up and said, who are you? Yeah, what was I doing with you? I don't remember liking you now that I'm not on the pill anymore. This is really peculiar. The important thing to remember is hormones are not drugs, and drugs are not hormones. Hormones have a dose-dependent effect. And one of the most important things that I learned, and that we're seeing borne out every day in the women that want to be followed, that show up at these meetings. We have giant meetings, group diagnostics, that Karen over there in the blue shirt invented, where all the women show up and tell me how they feel. I want to know if I'm killing anybody. And I make my doctor friends, and I have a few who come too, and we learn to alter the rhythm of the Wiley protocol up mostly, sometimes down a little, to a specific woman. You know, if she has a headache in this part or she feels like this. Because we're all different from each other. Everybody's got their own song. So one of the things that first happened was the doctors, who are used to prescribing drugs, wanted to give people half doses and titrate it up and see how it worked. You can't do that. Hormones do one thing at one level and something else at another. And since we have a template for health in young women at certain levels in blood work, we really don't want to see what happens when you don't do it right. That's not what we're doing. So it took a long time to make the doctors understand that hormones have a dose-dependent effect. Drugs, that's something else. You build up a drug till somebody's liver fails. You know, and then you say, oh, that's probably enough, okay? HRT studies that you guys have been witness to all these years, anything that's been reported, always studied Prempro or Premarin or Provera. Nobody's ever studied natural hormones, ever. We need a long-term, large-scale study, but when women look at me and say, how can you do this without a study? The Women's Health Initiative was 17 years. 17 years from now, I'll be 70. I'm not going to wait 17 years to try to feel better. You know, no guts, no glory. I'm sorry, I can't do that. So while we do need a long-term study, we're trying to get a longitudinal study through the IRB committee in Santa Barbara to follow the women already on the Wiley Protocol and anybody who wants to join it. In the meantime, we've managed to get through the IRB committee a comparison study, comparing dosing hormones the way I think it should be done versus steady doses of low, chronic, static amounts, like bioidenticals are prescribed now. You know, a little bit every day or a little bit with progesterone thrown in. That comparison study should start in a few months. We went to the American College for the Advancement of Medicine and asked them to endorse it. I did a keynote speech about it, and their doctors are excited. We have enough doctors for the pilot study, which will go 6 months. It has to show efficacy and safety. We don't kill anybody, and we can collect the data. We get to go on to a bigger study. Suzanne Summers is on the Wiley Protocol, and Mary Bono, Sonny Bono's widow, is Congresswoman Bono in Palm Springs. She's got the RFP to go ask Congress for money for the comparison study. So we're getting somewhere, finally. Somebody's going to look. Somebody's going to care. But these things are the tenets of truth. The leading cause of death is aging, whether it's breast cancer, heart disease. By aging, I mean hormonal fall off. That's aging. Nothing to run the parts anymore. Nothing to receive the cues from the environment. You know, I talked to the doctors this morning about how out of touch it seems to me that we as human beings are with the world. You know, we got a lot of Greenpeace people out there trying to save the planet, but I'm not sure they ever shook hands with it, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure they know what's out there. Because we talked this morning about knowledge and information and understanding. And we're all drowning in information. We live in the information age. There's too much to take in. And most of us can't understand what we do take in. But knowledge is something we all had. When you were young, you knew when you were hungry, and you knew when you were tired, and you knew when you were in love. Nobody knows that anymore. We stay up all night. We eat when we're not hungry. We eat crap when we are. And everybody sits in their own room and watches TV while they eat. There are no adhesion factors. And the hormones are a big part of that. You start to feel like you can relate again to the people around you. You notice when it's a pretty day. You don't turn the music down in the car. You have more patience for your kids. Because a lot of us did have kids and had them way too late. You know, we're tired. We should be their grandmothers, okay? But we did it that way. So now we got to raise them. Karen? I talked about the study. Go on, honey. We got it. We got it. We got it. Ah, this is interesting. I added these in after I did the AM talk. If you're still having periods and you want to take hormones, and we'll show you the hormones. The hormones come in syringes. And thanks to David Tomasco and now your local pharmacist, they've got my name on them. And that means I know what's in them. Because compounding is kind of a nightmare. I don't know if any of you have ever had problems. Progesterone's purple. Make it simple. Estrogen's evergreen. I'm going to throw these out and you guys can pass them around and look. Okay? Well, you should see what we're talking about. They come in foil packages. They're going to be gold now. They used to be silver. We think gold is nicer. It's the gold standard. But the reality is, compounding is a nightmare because when you bake a cake, it's never the same cake every time. And compounders tend to make whatever they want, whenever they want, for whatever price, and then tell you whatever they want to tell you to do with it. Because Big Pharma regulates very carefully what happens to pills. The FDA and the pharmaceutical companies say, this is a pill and this is what you can do with it. And they hand that to a doctor with a list of this is what you can do with it. Well, there's nobody regulating compounding. There's nobody saying this is a hormone, this is a pain cream, this is a whatever, this is what you can do with it. Everything is off-label, as the phrase goes, in compounding. For this product that has my name that I've worked on for a couple of years to make sure it works in a previous compounding pharmacy and now at the medicine shop and here at Dana's Pharmacy, it has to be made a certain way. It has to be made in small batches. It has to go through an ointment mill four times. Every line on those little syringes that you would dose yourself with has to have an equal amount of hormone in it. Otherwise, I can't do a study. Otherwise, I don't know what anybody's taking. I can't prove anything. So I need pharmacies to register and agree, even though it won't be as profitable for them as it would be if they did it on their own, to do it this way for the greater good. I need them to help us prove something with natural hormones. I need them to provide a quality product. And here in San Luis Obispo, Dana's agreed to do that. That's a big deal. Yeah, yeah. Health Plus Pharmacy. I call it Dana's, but it's Health Plus Pharmacy. You guys know where Health Plus is. It's a wonderful thing because compounders often make sometimes 400-500% on something. That's not going to happen. This is too labor intensive. They have to fill syringes. They have to run it through ointment mills a million times. It's a wonderful thing that he's going to do for you guys. And if people go to registered pharmacies, then anybody at any time can enter any of the studies, and I know what I'm studying. And I can prove something. So that's a big deal. Now, with these hormones that you're holding, you would get 9 of them in a package, and each little line has 1 milligram of estrogen or 25 milligrams of progesterone. And you take so many lines. Those of you who have read Sex, Lies, and Menopause know that there's a dosing schedule in the back of the book. I don't have one here, do I? No. There's a dosing schedule in the back of the book. And what we do is mimic a natural menstrual cycle starting on day 1 of your last menstrual cycle. But if you don't have a menstrual cycle, if it's been years since that happened, if you don't have a uterus, if you've been robbed, you can go on the lunar cycle because, surprise, surprise, women's menstrual cycles follow the moon. Day 12 is always the full moon because the full moon blocks melatonin, which would block estrogen, and it leaves estrogen receptors wide open. That's why there are songs like Moon Dance and Moon Over Miami and Harvest Moon, and everybody's hot during the full moon. Okay? So we've made a moon calendar. This is a lunar calendar. If you get hormones from a registered pharmacy, a licensed pharmacy, you can get a moon calendar from these people too. There are little icons on here because the way we did it, and we explained this to the doctors this morning, I would meet all these women and they'd say, oh, I had a headache. And I'd say, when? And they'd say, I don't know. And I'd say, but I have to know if you had too little estrogen in the front or blocked too much in the end, I have to know when the headache was to adjust the hormones. So we made a calendar with icons. Now Dana's wife says she's going to make better icons. I think it's a great idea. That would be nice. These icons aren't great. But they're little things like steaming tea kettles for a hot flash. You know what I mean? You can circle what happened to you on that day, and then your doctor has somewhere to go from. There has to be a map. So you can go on, Karen. That's a lunar cycle. The full moon was the 24th of April. If you count backwards 12 days, you get to the new moon. Now, those blank days in between, some months have 31 days, some months have 30 days, some months have 28 days. You're going to have some blank days after day 28, and your period will start. The first day you bleed is the first day of your menstrual cycle. If you, naturally, when you were young, had a 31-day cycle, some people do, you may not bleed on day 28. It may take you till day 31 if your brain picks up the rhythm again. But you keep taking your baseline of estrogen from day 1 to 5 through the blank days. So instead of taking 5 days of estrogen, some months you might take 7, or you might take 8. But you still have to count backwards from the full moon. Go ahead, Karen. And, of course, there's diagnostic markers of improvement. And before I ever thought of trying to make doctors want to do this for you, it occurred to me that if I could get my blood work to match a young woman's blood work on day 12 and 21, I had created a normal cycle. Now, 10 years ago, I couldn't get my hands on transdermal estrogen. So I used patches. I cut up thousands of patches, slapped them all over, and kept doing blood work till I could figure it out. Yeah, it really sucked. But I did figure it out. I figured out the amounts, and it works pretty much most of the time. In Santa Barbara, half of the people get great numbers that match these. 30% get perfect numbers. Sometimes they get good or bad numbers depending on what they ate, how they slept, how much stress they've got. And, you know, getting a low estrogen number is not a problem. You can always go ask for more in the Wiley protocol, so it's kind of nice. That's blood work. You would see that somebody, we're talking about estrogen being between 350 and 550 and progesterone being between 15 and 21. Labs vary, but you can pretty much, it's almost the same. I looked at blood work instead of saliva because saliva tests work pretty well for adrenal hormones, cortisol and DHEA and that kind of stuff, but they don't work really well for sex steroids because of something called sex hormone binding globulins, SHBG. SHBG changes every time you eat a cookie. It's insulin driven. So you can never tell what's happening in you and what's free. And the serum levels for normalcy in a young woman were figured out in the 50s. And frankly, women were healthier then. So we try to approximate that in blood work. Yeah, we know that one. Oh, yeah, some other books. Any questions? Would you like them to come to a mic for questions?
I don't think it's going to work with how many people are in the room, so just
yell. Yeah, just yell. Okay.
What is in the
yam-derived... that's true. I'm sorry. What's in the hormones? What's in the hormones is a base cream, and we've just managed to get 3 of the pesticides out of the last one. When base cream is sold to compounding pharmacists, there is sort of it's an organization called PCCA. And PCCA does a lot of the supplying to compounding pharmacists. And there is a base cream PCCA has been selling for almost 20 years. John Lee's progesterone was in it when you'd get it compounded. Everything's in it, biest, triest. It's called cosmetic HRT. Well, it turns out it had about 4 pesticides in it. Chemicals, when taken in larger doses, as endocrine disruptors. That's what pesticides do. They stop bugs from reproducing. That's how it works. But once that was obvious, and when you think about how much cream we're going to use, we use a lot more cream in a month in the Wiley protocol than you would if you were taking a quarter teaspoon every day in the old days. We need a cream that's better than that. And most recently, we found from a different company a cream that's missing 3 of the 4 pesticides, and within a couple months, we may get the last one out. So that's pretty good. The hormones are derived from yams in China, usually. They're sent by big distributors. One's called Spectrum. There's something called Hawkins, Gallipot. PCCA even, middleman, distributes some of them. But they're powdered hormones that are synthesized out of yams. Okay? Anybody else? Yeah. Do you need a prescription? Yes. These are FDA-controlled substances. Estrogen, estradiol. Right now, interestingly enough, the FDA has approved something called Estrazorb. And Estrazorb is in a ketchup packet with soy oil. It's 4.3 milligrams of estrogen, and they recommend 2 in a day. That's the most estrogen anybody's ever given any woman anywhere. It is exactly what we prescribe from day 1 to 5. They've come up to meet us. So now the doses don't look quite so high. And it turns out Estrazorb, Novavax, the company that did it, did cadaver studies, and you do get 70 picograms in blood. I don't know if that means anything to you guys, but it means I guessed at how much to take to get certain blood levels, and it was right. They've come up with real proof that that's true in a transdermal. I talked to 10 this morning. It's really cool. Well, Health Plus Pharmacy is going to have a list of prescribers. Thank you, honey. Okay. Who is it? No. Sorry, they hand me notes and I get sidetracked. The point of me licensing pharmacies to use my name is so I know what's in it and so I can strongly suggest a recommended price, if you catch my drift. So the hormones should be the same price, in the same packaging, with the same ingredients, made the same way, everywhere women go and ask for the Wiley Protocol. David Tomasco's part of registering pharmacies. Right here in San Luis Obispo is the next licensed pharmacy. So the price here will be the same as the price in Santa Barbara, which hopefully will be the same price everywhere. That's the point. Oh, shall I tell them how much it is? It's $75 for 2 hormones. For a month. Estrogen and progesterone together are $37.50 each for a month, and insurance covers it many times. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. Well, Dana, I'm sure we'll work with the Tomascos in figuring out how they get it done in Santa Barbara. Okay?
So Preston Care and Templeton is not registered?
They haven't jumped on board yet.
Are you working on it?
What did you say? They said there's not enough people in Templeton interested. So if you're interested, okay, so everybody in here who would like to buy hormones at that place, call them and say, we sure wish you were registered so we know what's in the hormones. And we'll go train them, you know.
I'm seeing Dr. Jennifer Berman in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Do you know what time she does?
Ah. Well, the question is, what about the other hormones besides estrogen and progesterone? What about testosterone? What about DHEA? What about salt? Pregnenolone. My worldview is that you start at the top. You know, I tell everybody to visualize a glass vase full of marbles. We know that if you start at the top with the hormones, if you move the top marbles, nothing moves down below. You pull out a marble in the middle, you try to control For example, an enzyme, use something like DIM. Or you try to put in a hormone like DHEA, which could convert to testosterone or estrogen, depending on what you ate or how you slept. It's too hard to control all that. I suggest, since sleeping controls eating, and sleeping and eating mark off time to the end of reproduction, when people take estrogen and progesterone and put back, obviously, organs that have failed, like ovaries, I suggest you work on eating and sleeping first. As you age, women over 65, some of them need testosterone. Some women have low testosterone because they're thin and they have low adrenal function. Some women may feel better on a little bit of DHEA. We haven't done that in Santa Barbara yet in any large scale because we wanted to be able to look at the situation in a pure fashion and see what we did with this. Throwing a lot of hormones at a body all at once, I can't tell what I did. With what? So in order to do science, I like to move one variable at a time and see what the result is. But in L.A., Prudence Hall and Howard Leibowitz, Uzi Rice, there are a few doctors who are willing to prescribe the Wiley protocol if you're interested. Yeah. Well, where's Dr. Mathis when you need him? Is he still here?
He just said goodbye.
He just left. Dr. Mathis told a great story this morning about a young woman who's about 36. Oh, I'm sorry. They asked me about endometriosis. We have a few patients with endometriosis that don't have it anymore. It works. And fibroids and prolonged bleeding and, you know, everything that happens to you in the middle of life. Yeah. We all start at the same place, and then it's adjusted for you. But for 3 months, you take your hormones, because you don't even have receptors when you start. You have to take the estrogen till month two, just to have enough estrogen receptors, to make a progesterone receptor, so you can receive the progesterone. The only side effect we see universally is tender breasts in the first 3 months, but it always ends at month three. And the full dose, sometimes it goes on 6-7 months.
And do all women need estrogen and progesterone?
Do they need it? I think physiologically to be healthy, yes. Do they think they need it? Most women do. Some women say, but I feel great, why would I take it? And then they take it and they say, now I don't get up 3 times in the middle of the night. Now my skin looks better. Now I can see straight. Now I, you know, things you learn to live with, you don't have to live with. Anything that didn't happen to you when you were 20 shouldn't happen to you now on the hormones. Yeah. Yeah. Well, your thyroid is in your TSH is in yeah, how about osteoporosis? I'm sorry. And thyroid problems. Your TSH is in inverse proportion to your estrogen. So when we make a cycle like this, your TSH goes down when your estrogen goes up. Okay, it's like that. It moves. Nothing is stable or stagnant in a body. In order to be stable, you have to be variable. Things have to go up and down and up and down. So although we measure thyroid or do a thyroid panel on 12 and it doesn't look high, it doesn't look hypo, it doesn't look high, it's because the TSH is suppressed that day by estrogen. It comes back up on 14. People have racing hearts, the bed shakes, they're, you know, hyperthyroidism comes before hypothyroidism in most cases. Usually you wear out your thyroid first by having hyperthyroid symptoms. And those will stop on the protocol. If, in fact, your thyroid is too worn out to work, then you add in thyroid. You know, by the time we get to you. And osteopenia, we've seen cases of it reversed. And osteoporosis in, come on, our TV host. Yeah, is it osteoporosis or osteopenia? Okay, it's working its way backwards. And it's been how long for her?
10 months.
So it goes away. You have to, bone has a life cycle. bone grows and dies and grows and dies. And estrogen in your skeletal muscle and your nerve system takes things away. Progesterone takes things away in soft tissue. So myelination, that wire coating on the plastic on a wire that keeps the circuit good, that comes and goes on your neurons in a month. Estrogen takes away, progesterone puts it back. If you get stuck with just estrogen, MS can happen. All kinds of things can happen. With bones, if you get stuck with just low dribbling estrogen, you get osteoporosis. It eats up bone. Progesterone puts it back. So it's in the reverse of soft tissue.
Yes, I was wondering in your study if you've seen any dramatic effects of this balancing on women that are overweight.
Well, we don't have the study going yet. We're watching women, but that's perceived to be anecdotal until we start to report the findings. I don't know about weight. It was my assumption that the minute I fixed my hormones, I was never heavy. I mean, I had lots of babies. I got as fat as I am after the last one, and she was born when I was 38. And I've never made a real attempt to lose it, to tell you the truth. I suppose I could if I tried. I find that the hormones can't work as well in someone really overweight, because SHBG, sex hormone binding globulin, which is responsive to insulin, will take them out of circulation. Or you won't have enough estrogen receptors, because insulin makes an estrogen receptor, and if you're insulin resistant, you don't have as many. So, I mean, there are all kinds of factors. Some women say they gain 5 pounds that comes and goes, which would have to be water weight, like when you were young, you know, before a period. Some women say they've put on 10 pounds, but they were pretty skinny to begin with, if you ask me. Well, you know, the yoga ladies, they all flip out. You know what I mean, right? Where you can see ribs and stuff. Girls should be soft, I think. But so I know that progesterone steps in at IRS2, insulin response substrate 2, and wakes up insulin receptors. So if you're insulin resistant and way overweight, it's got to help you to have 2 weeks of progesterone every month to regulate your receptors. I know that in terms of blood sugar. Because we know that type 1 diabetics who have to take insulin take much less during the luteal phase, you know, when you've before ovulation. So I put an oncologist's name on the book. It was for questions like that. The oncologist that I work with, Julie Taguchi, has been on the protocol for 6 or 7 years now. And she's an oncologist. Her patients are on it, lots of them, post-diagnosis. And the reality is, her question was, I had an estrogen receptor positive tumor, and I've been conditioned to believe I can't have any estrogen, that it's not safe. The reality is, one of the biggest treatments for breast cancer up until the 80s was DES. Now, DES is a synthetic estrogen. We all know about DES babies. Women who took DES to avoid miscarriage had children with cervical cancer later. DES is a super estrogen that's synthetic. They used to give it to women with breast cancer because it made it better. Now they give tamoxifen. Tamoxifen was a fertility drug that is a super estrogen. When you reach G1 arrest on day 12, things stop growing. It is only low chronic doses of estrogen that can cause endless proliferation. When you reach G1 arrest on day 12, you make a progesterone receptor. If you put the progesterone in, you get apoptosis. They did a study in the Journal of Fertility and Sterility, priming with estrogen using natural progesterone. They took out biopsy samples, lumps, and saw tumors falling. I think it's safer to be on the protocol if you've had breast cancer, if you've had children, if there's a legacy of heart disease in your family, then it is not to be on the protocol. But that's my opinion. Dr. Moran.
Thank you. Thank you, Susie. The question is how quickly do you see these results? Because, you know, it is a big thing that happens with them when all of a sudden a breast cancer is discovered. And I agree with everything that you're saying, but how quickly will you see something that will turn around, either by tomography or something that will, you know, give a definitive direction, yet this is working this way?
I have tried to get to the point with patients. I mean, I only get to see them usually when they're almost dead. But I've tried to see early on DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, those little sparkles. And that breast cancer is softer and slower growing and nothing like what it should be. Usually contralateral breast cancers from tamoxifen are virulent. You can't reach them with anything. The only other breast cancer that I know about happened in a woman 4 years down the line who did not want to take enough to have a period. And I suggested to her doctor that she not take it at all. But she developed breast cancer on less than a half a dose. So that's all I know so far. But given how many women are on it and how many women have been on it for a while, we should see something by now, and we don't. I've done it for 10 years. And I did it because I had lumps, and they went away. Fibrocystic breasts will disappear. Cysts disappear. Fibroids seem to go away.
When you're in your 70s, you just call it a day.
Well, I'm really more interested in what kind of a day you call it. Was it a good day? Or was it a bad day? I'm sorry? Absolutely. I believe that.
Thank you. First, we want to thank the Women's Community Center. We want to thank the Women's Community Center for sponsoring this talk today and all their great publicity that they did. They did a great job. I also want to let the people in Templeton know that Dana's Pharmacy Health Plus does shipping. You can Federal Express. You can also start the auto refill system. They've been shown how to do an automatic refill system. So if you want to get on the Wiley protocol, you can talk to your doctors. Health Plus Pharmacy will have a list of physicians that have been trained basically in the preliminary dynamics of the Wiley protocol this morning and who are interested and wanting to start to work with the Wiley protocol. So this is Dana right here, Dana Nelson of the Health Plus Pharmacy. And I know somebody has made this, which is to be presented to Susie.
Thank you.
As a memento of her day here. Thank you, everyone, for attending. Books are available both at the co-op and...